Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the HSG. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to HSBG Podcast. I'm your host, Educator Collins, and I'm here with my constant co-host, Shady Bunny. How you doing, Shady?
I'm doing great, Collins. It's been super fun past few weeks. How you been doing?
I've been doing solid. Been having a good old time playing some BGs, beating some noobs, that kind of thing, right?
Been playing a lot. Poning some noobs, as the kids say.
Yes. But we do have a server-side patch. There's no, like, big, crazy patch this couple of weeks, but still pretty impactful, some interesting things that we will be talking about.
Yep. Yeah, the big thing in quest meta is that armor is probably at its most relevant now.
But that's always the quest important. Like, that is something very unique to quest meta, where armor just has a lot more power in quest meta compared to some of the other meta. So,
yep.
Just kind of.
Yeah, that's. I talked about it on stream that quest meta is the only meta where Guff and Sneed are suddenly pretty good because they have so much armor.
But whose fault is that, you know?
It's funny. Yeah. They actually gave Sneed less armor. I think this is the patch we talk about, yeah. So the I guess we're not gonna like cover every single hero that has an armor change, but I'll talk about the ones I guess that are interesting or relevant.
I mean, you can just say like these heroes got weaker. Like that is kind of true to say like that in quest meta.
Sure, or stronger. Sure. We could say the ones they buffed, the ones that have more armor are Daryl, Galewing, Blackthorn, Deathwing, Patches, Millie, Enhanso, Meccano, Varden, Cariel, George, Rakanishu, Ragnaros.
And Ragnaros,
yeah. So,
does any of them jump out to you? I will say, like, some still at lower MMRs have the same amount of armor, so that is to be said. Like Patches and Maleficent and Cariel, like, and Ragnaros, those still have the same amount of armor at low MMR, being that they are probably fine at low MMR, but they kind of struggle a bit once you...
Well, this is because their hero power is relevant at low MMR.
Yeah.
And on high MMR, no one gives a shit about Rag's hero power.
It's plus four, plus four.
You might swap it out before it becomes online. Probably not, but...
That's funny. That's sad, actually.
It's very sad, but you might swap it out before it comes online. Probably not, but in a certain game it might happen, so... It's just so funny to think about.
That's horrible.
It is horrible, but that's a good example of how, you know... But this is a problem you can't really properly solve because you can't really let it scale with MMR. I think that'd be a little bit weird. Right, and like, oh, and that's 17k, it gives plus 10 plus that, or you know, that'd be way too much. But just to give a
you gain one stats per thousand MMR.
Per thousand MMR goes up that one. Yeah. That seems weird. And then you're in the lobby with a rack that scales plus 10 plus 10, you're like, oh my god, this guy is a beast.
This is a pretty good hero. Let me start picking it, you know, like up here.
But
like, yeah, okay,
Jeeves, the only person where Rag is viable, is like, oh yeah, that's nice. Plus 17, let's go, baby. The one that stands out from here, I suppose, would be to see that Rag went, I think, from 20 to 16. And then they were like, no, that's not okay. I think they just saw that a lot of the 20 armor heroes were really overperforming. Because we see that in the ones that have less armor, Sneed had 20 and was now bumped to 18. So I think one of the only, if not the only 20 armor hero is still Guff. Because Guff, it's the same thing. In a good game, you probably press his button on turn 3 and then never again. Which is kind of sad that your hero power is on turn 3, you gain plus 4 because it's pretty good there. You have 5 gold and you buy a unit for 3 and then hero power for 2. But, you know, sometimes you might get a chef's choice or something and you're like, do I even want to get the 4-4? Maybe I want to get an extra unit. I'm not so sure. And that's kind of sad that, you know, in some games you're like, well, this button is never getting pressed. So,
but you have 20 armor, so it pays for
itself.
So.
I won a Guff game earlier because I had to play six elementals for Tome, which is the Milhouse hero power. So that was like, well, let me just play some elementals, and now I'm Milhouse. How nice. Yeah, I pressed it more than one time today, but that's honestly, that's
I
mainly
love
because.
how chat's like, "Hey, Shady, you actually pressed it
Yeah, but
twice."
that's because I'm slow, honestly. That's because I dumped gold into it because it was easy. But had I been playing faster, I don't think I would have done it. But that is entirely true, Piger. Call me on my bullshit. I casted at least twice that game. Chat keeping me
is
honest.
not a
That's
good
good.
argument. You guys are like, actually cost it twice, and I'm just like, okay, like, all right.
The developers are like, okay, Guff, not too weak. Shady used hero power twice this game. Excellent.
Amazing.
But yeah, that's the quest life. Yeah, so on the ones that are getting less armor, we have Nozoth and Terran, which makes so much sense. These guys are quest machines with death rattles and, you know, killing your own minions, spawning minions, popping death rattles, all that stuff. Although the pop death rattle quest has been disabled, we'll talk about that later. Excuse me. Kurtress is now 13, which makes sense because very good hero for questing. You can buy a lot of units to pop the hero power. A lot of quests wants you to buy a lot of units. They want you to play battle cries. They want you to spend gold. It's all very, very synergistic. Maiev makes sense because you can hero power early and just stack a bunch of stuff in your hand. Excuse me. And then you can play more units. Oh, excuse me, guys.
You just finished eating, huh? Or
Not
something.
just, but I think I ate some vegetables where my stomach
Oh
isn't good.
no, the horror.
It's like the
that
yeah, I ate vegetables.
you had in
Yo, what
mind.
are you doing, man? What a misplay. No, but they the like part of the peel was still on, I think, and my stomach probably has a tougher time with that. Anyways,
Okay,
to
fair
go
enough.
into the intricacies of my diet.
Yeah.
What else do we have here? Chen
Shambhala, yeah.
13, which also makes sense because you can swap the hero power out later on and early on. If you get anything involving spending money or, you know, God forbid, playing elementals, that's also pretty good. Lich Bazeel 16, again, that makes sense because her hero power makes it easier to play more units. It makes it easier to sneak in a spell. And then Sneed going to 18, that's purely because Sneed had 20 and his hero power was sometimes pretty good for the quest if you needed to summon or,
Destroy.
you know, if the Death Rattle quest was still in. But yeah, here I'm gonna go to the quest adjustments. Exhume the Bones is the Death Rattle quest. And that's been temporarily removed due to a bug. I don't know what bug.
So not because it's broken.
My thought would be that there's a lot of Death Rattle stuff that felt really good to get. But if they say it's a bug, I'm going to assume it's a bug. I don't think they have any
I think the
troubles.
bug is like this has much higher win percentage
And
than
we don't
everything
know why.
else. Like, yeah, so let's remove it
I
because a
think
bug
for
is.
the most part they're on point with saying like, oh, this is too strong, right? We've nerfed it. And I don't see why they wouldn't just add a death rattle, and then if it's too strong, add another death rattle. Right? So if the base is three, they'd make it four, and then, you know, Pilfered Lamps will be, you know, 9 or 12 or whatever. Probably not nine, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But maybe, I don't know. I'm going
Yeah,
off
maybe.
what's right
Maybe.
here.
I guess that's fair.
But the biggest one for quest adjustments is that the offering bonus for new quests is now gone. So my win rate has been going up. And I think that's because there's old quests that I'm used to, right, that are popping up more often, and you're not forced to play with new quests, which is, you know, fine. I thought they were fun. I just had less experience with
That's fair.
them. Then quest rewards adjustments. They've removed Menagerie Mayhem and Smoking Gun, which is great because, you know, as much as I win games sometimes with a Mayhem or a Smoking Gun, those are almost never exciting games. It's just I'll take my quest, I'll get a little bit more attack on my guys, so I just take less damage, which means I don't die here, which means I get to buy some good cards, and my quest is pretty irrelevant at this point. And that's, you know, that's not really a fun way to play the game, where, you know, you barely you forget you have a quest, and you know, that shouldn't be the case.
I will, like, in the realm of power creep, these don't do it for me. You know what I mean? When you're comparing some of the stuff we have now, Smoking Gun and Mayhem are like very low low impact.
And they those did are buff just... Mayhem where it's 1/1 now instead of just attack. So
sure. Sure. Yeah, you tell yourself that.
Well, that's some boards where it's like 5/5 to all your types, right? It's like honestly, like Lightfang was 2/2, right? So if you have 5 types,
and that's an issue with Lightfang.
Yeah, that's so sad.
Don't even get there.
You can just... make Mayhem 2.5 Lightfangs. It's still not that great.
And still, yeah.
Oh, Lightfang up the hands. Yeah, these old guys talking about Lightfang. What is this card?
It needs to buff itself and have a little bit more higher scaling. Anyways, let's move on. We don't need to do this.
Poor Lightfang. Okay. Then
just make it a amalgam. Easy.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that. That seems pretty strong.
I know.
I'm joking. There's been some quests that have been made easier to earn.
So it means they weren't doing as good as they hoped.
Yeah. And from these, a lot of them make sense to me. I think the one people could look at and say, I guess there's two here that don't make that much sense on surface inspection. Wisdom Ball becoming easier at first glance might not make sense, but people probably pick it way too often in positions they really shouldn't because it's Wisdom Ball. And then, you know, they die and it has bad stats. So I can see that being the case.
It definitely feeds the problem of like being complicated, and because it's complicated, people like don't play it as well as theoretically they could. They probably like settle on things that will still kill them, you know, like, oh, we're settling here, but like I'll die in 2 turns.
Yeah. And I think also just like taking the quests and dying.
It's expensive, because it is an expensive quest.
Because it's like taking it like, oh, I gotta play 5 battle cries, and there's like 0 battle cries in your shop, but it's Wisdom Ball. I'll find 5 battle cries. How hard
you
can that be?
You will find 5 battle cries.
Yeah, I'll find it. It's, come on, man. It's Wisdom
Ball.
Costs
you 30 HP.
Yeah. Always Wisdom Ball. Yep. Yeah. The other one that's weird is Splitting Scroll, but I think Splitting Scroll is difficult to play with. That one gives you a copy of your spell that you buy if the spell costs 3 or more. So you can't copy Overconfidence. You can't copy the coins and all that. But you can copy. There's a very specific Splitting Scroll strategy that's super strong right now that involves Azurite. So you're on tier 4. Azurite is the spell Nomi. So every time you cast a spell, you get +1 to all your elementals in the shop. And then they use the dragon that eats the shop. So the combo with Splitting Scroll is that they stay on tier 4, and then they buy something like a Brand's Blessing, and then they get 2 Brand's Blessings. They buy the spell that triggers a minion's battle cry, and they get 2 of those, and then they can trigger the dragon's battle cry to eat the whole shop. So they cycle spells, roll for a shop that has some elementals in it, and then eat that shop. And you very quickly get a dragon that's in 1,000 stats like that. But that's hard to do because you need to survive, you need to set up, you need to play some random bullshit while you're completing your quest and then while you're moving towards Azurite. And then, you know, I've tried it myself and I've died on the way there. So
that's probably an issue. If Shady's dying, then probably.
Well, I mean, it was my first time and I didn't do it very well, but yeah, I died trying to do it. So, but I can see high level players that have done it multiple times looking at it, be like, oh, this is now easier. Lol, let's go.
Yeah. Another thing that seems to be like very similar with a lot of these rewards is that they don't give you immediate strength. You have to do more work after you trigger them, right? So, same thing with like, yeah, I guess like you get the roll that turn. Wisdom Ball, you have to start rolling. Cookbook, you need time to scale. Splitting Scrolling, you buy things. A lot of these you have to like, you get the trigger or the quest and you still have to do a little bit more, so it might make sense to give you more time to do a little bit more.
And a contrast to that, we have the ones that have been made harder. Tumbling Disaster is the one where when you get it online, your summons get +1/+1, and then it's Avenge 4, increase it by 1/1. So if you get that online early, you can, it's kind of like bananas where everything is a beast and you have banana built in. Kidnap Sack was also just good and too easy. Yeah. Tombs is
it's the
always
opposite,
too easy.
Right? Like you trigger it and bam, you're like significantly stronger. Like,
yeah, there are two, right? So you have Secret Sinstone, which is still very difficult to set up and even more difficult to pilot. But
yeah,
if you,
but that one just wins you the game. So.
Yeah, yeah, you can play that very inefficiently and still win because you get so much, especially when Nagas are in. It's insane. So, then Hidden Treasure Vault is just, okay, here's a bunch of extra money.
Yeah, so. And the earlier you get it, the faster you scale. And if you get early enough, it becomes like super crazy.
So. Yeah, I've done turn one vaults or turn four.
Yeah, that's the you see in there. There's the problem.
Turn four vault, baby. I mean, honestly, anything that does as a requirement, play Elemental, you could one-shot. Just because Elemental's in the game. That's one of those things where that's mainly a quest requirement where I don't know if that should be removed, but it's just, yeah. Elemental is...
Remove Elementals? That would be...
No.
That would change
the Remove game. The requirement of, like, you can't have play Elemental.
That's what I meant. Remove the Elemental requirement. It's like, that would also change the game is what I mean. Like, you can't... It means that I'm not holding Elementals. Like, feels kind of bad.
Yeah. It's part of the game, so it's fine. It's just you can do some silly stuff with Elementals.
Some stupid stuff, yeah, that's fair. The card is the best card in the game. You remember that?
Yeah. That was a good joke. A little inside fun. That's for one of the reveal videos we made for Naga Patch, or yeah, I think it was Naga Patch. That was fun. Yeah, I think we announced the Tissa and Mantid Queen.
Yeah, that kind of thing, yeah.
That was good. Right.
We also said Amalgam was being removed. Ha, what a joke.
Yeah, and then it came back later. Yeah. We go to HS replay. We can do the hero in the background. Because I think that's a nice... but I think the...
Deeds is number one.
Someone Mercenaries KW. I'm like, what is this?
Mercenaries. Is that still around?
I know a guy that played that once.
You know, me too, but
yeah,
that's not the question.
No, I thought we'd have that in the background, and then we can talk about it later. But the I would suggest the first thing to talk about is the elephant in the room, the fish in the room. let me grab that tweet. I think RDU made a tweet.
It says the best compositions are beasts.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
has to be true.
Beast and Murloc are both very, very good. I would say those two are the most consistent.
Murloc's not even there till the second line, till tier two. It's Beast, Undead, Elemental, Beast, and then Murlocs.
Oh, but that's just like for that hero though, right?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Right.
I know.
No, I think if we're talking about which one is the best on average, Beast is better than Murloc on average. But the reason
that's probably true.
The reason why Murloc feels very unfun
it wins
to play.
The game.
Yeah, you cannot outstat a Murloc player.
Yeah.
Unless there is some extreme disparity between the quality of your high roll and their high roll, like you have no chance to outstat a Murloc player. It's there's just something with the interaction with quests, excuse me, where it's too easy to get to your setup, and the setup is Murkai Primal Fin or Rylac Primal Fin, so you fill your hand with Murlocs, and then you just have a Bream in your hand, and the ridiculous thing there is that you're getting a very, very large Bream in your hand while getting an extra like 10 gold just pocket change to play the game with. So we've seen that in the past, any composition that gets a bunch of extra money at the start of the turn. This was Beast pre-nerf, pre-chicken nerf, right? Where you would have a chicken early in the game and you would have a spore bat. You would also start your hand with 10 spells in your hands. Now, 10 Murlocs is also really good because all of them sell for 1 gold or more and they're buffing your coral and your bream. But 10 spells is also fantastic, of course. But that is really the thing where you're just playing with way more resources, and scamming Murlocs is almost impossible because they rely on base skill. So they have scam protection built into their comp because they have things that make more things. So if they're paying a little bit of attention and they either get a blaster of their own or they have shield on their coral and they have maybe a golden base skill, an extra base skill, it's like, good luck having poison versus that. That's, you know, almost never going to work. Yeah. So that's I think, the main complaint most people have when it comes to Murlocs is that it feels extremely inevitable. You see someone doing well with Murlocs and you're just like, oh, I can't win anymore. And you feel this huge pressure on yourself to be like, oh, I need to brand right now because I need to get the Murloc train online early enough. Otherwise, my Murlocs are going to be too small. And yeah, that just doesn't feel very good. Where I think I spent 3 or 4 games in a row today on stream on 5 rolling for brand. It's like so dumb. It's like, well, the only thing that matters is finding a brand, because if I don't get a brand, I don't get as much Murlocs in my hand and I can't, you know, I can't fish for all the good stuff and, you know, yada yada yada. So yeah, that's usually how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems that if you're trying to beat a Murloc player, how do you attempt it? Because all the options you have still lose to base skill, pretty much. So it's
if they know what they're doing, you can't win, realistically.
Yeah. But yeah, that's why it has the highest win percentage out of all the archetypes. And, you know, generally a good archetype to play if you have the setup, though. You know, it requires a setup, but the setup isn't like, it's not crazy hard. I mean, you need brand.
It's pretty high tier, right? Because you need brand, and then you either need like Reborn Rylac or you need Primal Fin or the other one, Murkai.
Murgrowth?
Murkai, yeah. Murgul was removed. But a lot of the time, yeah, Murgul is the Reborn undead guy that has Venom.
Oh no, I'm talking about the
Coral Murgler.
Yeah.
Murgle.
Why would they name it Murgle and Murgle?
Yeah, why would they do that? Why would Blizzard do this? Yeah.
How dare they?
Murgle. Yeah, so corals are actually fine to get later, because when you have your value train online, you'll be able to go to 6 and then you'll generate Murlocs and you'll just find a coral at some point. The main thing is you need Primal Fin, and then you need a way to trigger it, which is Rylac or Murkai, and then you basically need brand, because without the brand, you'll never have the handful of Murlocs. Like, right. Today I had Golden Primal Fin next to a Murkai, and that's just 2 Murlocs end of turn. That's the quest, basically. Like, here's 2 Murlocs, right? Start of your turn, only it's end of your turn. And that doesn't win you the game. It's like, here's +6/+6 on your Bream and 2 gold. That doesn't cut it. That's not enough to win the game with. But then once you have a brand, you get a lot more and you have more money, and then you go to 6 and then you might be able to make a golden Murkai, and now suddenly you're getting 8 Murlocs end of turn, and then that's really when you start flying. When you get 8 per turn, that's where you can feel the first place coming.
Wee!
First place.
Yeah. And it's not even like you... It gives you all the cards you need to win, too. That's, like, the annoying part, where once you get the setup, you're like, okay.
It takes care of itself,
it takes care of yourself, yeah. It's kind of annoying.
That's why I said it's... when, especially if it's a galley, where you're just like, oh, okay, I'm not even going to try. It just feels very new. But the reason why I think you're overall weaker than beasts is that you can easily die on the way to getting that comp, and you can very easily miss a crucial piece and never really take off. But when you're playing beast, once you have Goldrin and Banana, you're a monster. You're very strong. Yeah, then you can get the chicken later. You can start with something like Slyraptor and the Panther on tier 1 Mana Saber, right? Because that's fine. You're going to get, let's say you have a Reborn Goldrin, so it goes off twice. Then you have +6/+4 to all your summons. You have 1 banana. Now you have +12/+8 to all your summons. If you have a Mana Saber on the board, that's actually relevant, those 2 tokens. And then when you find a Mech Horse, you can upgrade that, and you can, you know, get the Baron, get the Chicken and all that. But you're strong. Whereas if I have a Primal Fin and a Murkai on my board, I'm not strong yet.
I need the Bream in my hand. I need the base skill to pull it. I need to get the brand to get more stuff. I need the coral and yada, 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 yada.
Right. Yeah, so if you die during those moments, that's the only big weakness.
Yeah, or you can just get it online too late, because Beasts has a way of catching up. Once the comp is online, it's online. Doesn't matter if you had to wait longer for your Tidus or not. But with Murlocs, if I can only start buffing my Bream on turn 11, that's very different than someone that's had a Bream in their hand since turn 8. That is a, you can feel like, oh, it's too late, I can't catch up anymore, I can't build enough stats. Sadly. Yeah, the thing is, though, you're not Beasts until you have Goldrin. You do need to remember that, because I although I have had some games where I've won without Goldrin, but that's where I had just bananas. I rolled so many bananas. I was like, all right, fuck it. I don't need Goldrin. I think the quest I had was Divine Armor. So I gave Divine Shield and stats to the leftmost minion in my hand. And then I used Fluidity to switch that minion out so I could buff someone else. So I had two Feathermanes that were big and I had Divine Shield. And I just had Golden Banana and two regular bananas. So I was doing x3, x2, x2 on things that had a lot of base stats. So those were some big boys, some big Feathermanes.
That's been nice.
That was a fun game. I won that game with 5 units on my board. It was,
as you should. As is the standard.
That was so funny, because I tripled the other banana, right? So I had two golden bananas in the back. Then chicken, Tidus, and a raptor. So the raptor just went off twice at the start of the fight. Bonk, bonk, right, with like double buffs. And I had two Feathermanes in my hand. So that was hilarious. 5 units.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good, I can times. See it. Sounds good.
Apart from that, I don't think there's anything that's super dominant. The
demons.
The main outlier, I'd say, is Feldrake. I don't think it's demons in general, although there is definitely some Felemental bullshit.
Not Felbor?
No, Felbor is... I would say that the Feldrake is what keeps you alive. And then...
To get the Felbor?
Yeah, the Felbor is more like you're going to style on them. It's like, oh, my shop's so big now. Now it's time to get a Felbor and spam some spells, and I'm gonna win this game in style. I would say the minion that's the largest in those demon boards, it's almost always Feldrake, just because it's so easy to proc it. It can be next to a Murkai. It can be proc'd with the spell that can eat the whole shop. You can have a Bran. You can have double end of turn and all that. Well, double end of turn wouldn't really matter, because... But the Golden Feldrake was now buffed, where before the Golden Feldrake would just eat 6.
Right.
So that didn't matter with Bran, because you couldn't get 12.
Yeah.
But now it has double the stats. So now with Bran, you'll eat the whole shop and you'll get the stats twice, which is pretty ridiculous. So,
much better, yeah.
Especially in a lobby where Bramble Witch is out, you can rely on Cultist and Feldrake, where you taunt the Feldrake, you have 2 Cultists in the back, and then you just resummon a bunch of big Feldrakes.
Yep. I would say another outlier is Warpwing. Do you disagree with that?
I love Warpwing. I play a ton of Warpwing myself. It's I would say Dragons.
You don't think it's a problem, because Dragons are Dragons.
Yeah, I think that if you take that away, you win no Dragon games.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm just, but like, you know, the card itself is like very...
It's like Deflecto, right? Like, Deflecto is BS, but you take Deflecto away from mech, it's like mechs have absolutely nothing then. It's, although
I don't think Deflecto that BS anymore. Like,
no, but back in the day, right?
Yeah, back in the day for sure. Yeah.
Back when we would complain about Deflecto, saying like, this unit is so good. It's like you take it away and mechs did nothing then.
Do nothing.
Yeah. Right now, I would say if you're going to play mech, it's with a specific quest or with a specific strategy. The really insane strategy you can do with mechs, it's quite difficult to execute, but insane once you get it going. So once you have Beatboxer, what you can do is put all your magnetics on top of each other and then use Fluidity, which is the spell that swaps the minion back in the shop. So you have this huge stack of magnetics, which you buy out of the shop. You play a regular magnetic on the board, unmagnetized. You take the huge stack, put it back on that magnetic, and then your beatboxers get the buff. So let's say you had +50 on that one ball of magnetics. That 50-50 goes on your beatboxers. But more important than that, they have, like, let's say 20 magnetics on that ball. And obviously you start smaller, right? But you get to 20 magnetics. And so your beatboxers get 20 magnetics. So your utility drones buff it for 20 extra magnetics. And all the accordotrons also apply. So you're going to start your turn with 20 gold and then with 40 gold and then with 80 gold. And it's going to be something insane. But obviously that's, you need to survive. You need to get beatboxer. You need to roll fluidity, right? So it's quite an elaborate setup. But when you have it rolling, it's bonkers because you'll have so much money, it'll keep itself rolling. You'll find another fluidity because you start your turn with 40 gold. It's, yeah, quite ridiculous.
Just do that, you know?
Just do that, yeah.
Yeah. Like,
you get like a 4K player. How do I play Mex? All right, let me explain this to you. All right, grab a notepad.
We're actively killing people with that suggestion.
It's, yeah. If you try that and you have no experience doing that, your chances of success are very low. So be willing to lose some MMR if you want to try out that strategy. And very important, you can't swap a gold and magnetic in the shop. So a lot of people will mess up at some point and triple the magnetic, which is fine, but then you need to have a regular magnetic first on the board, put the golden on the normal magnetic, and then the stack will not be golden anymore. It will be a regular magnetic. It's weird how that works, but it's like money laundering. The golden minion is now gone. It's a clean regular minion. The gold is gone. Never existed.
Feels bad.
Golden minion comes in, regular minion goes out. Nothing to see here.
Yep.
So that's how I would say mechs have actually, they're very strong when you get that online, but yeah, that's way, way more difficult than getting the Murloc comp online. And I already explained that you can definitely die while trying to get the Murloc comp online, so you can definitely die getting the mech comp online.
What about some of the weaker, like the still weak archetypes? I mean, Blizzard's been trying to like balance them all up, but
all right, sure. Let's do the. Some that
just still suck.
What's the? Where's the tap where I can see, their thing.
The composition tab, I guess. Is that what you're looking for?
Yeah. So we have a visual, right? We can see how much I agree or disagree with this. Yeah, I definitely disagree with stuff, but that's because we're talking about averages and we're talking about.
The highest is like top 20, which is 7K. So it's not that high.
Oh right, I'm watching top 50. Yeah, yeah. This still has pirates for it. So the reason, yeah. So this is 7,000 and up, and probably a lot of 7,000 games because the up is fewer and fewer, right?
Yeah, it's fewer and fewer. Yeah,
that's true. The so for those of you who are just listening, the tier list. I guess we'll tackle the first half and then the second half. So the first five are Beast, Demon, Murloc, Dragon, Undead. Now keep in mind that this is not ranked based on their total, you know, ultimate strength. This is ranked on how, you know, if you are going to average play Beasts. Placement. Yeah, if you play Beasts this game, what is your average placement? That is the what they're talking about.
And I will say average placement is skewed so low. Like, best is fourth place average, which is like not true. Like, if you're really playing like high level beast, you're not getting like fourth place average, I feel. So
yeah, I mean, if you're playing high place anything, your average is going to be much higher than fourth, or you have a bad day. You have a really bad day.
Yeah,
I don't know how that works with average placements where 4.18. I'm sure mathematically it makes sense. That was just something that's not intuitive to me, because I would assume that it would place above fourth, right? Some of these. Well,
it probably includes like mirror matches and stuff like that, so it might skew the numbers down.
Sure. So, anyways, I'm not gonna, you know, listeners can educate me on that. That's fine.
Sure, that's fair.
But the reason why Beast is up here is it's what we mentioned earlier. When you get your Goldrin and then, you know, hopefully a banana, but even if you have just Reborn Goldrin and a Titus, right? You're still strong. You can add the banana later. Honestly, that's it. When you have Goldrin and you just have any of the other pieces, either a chicken or a Titus or just a reborn, right? That makes it so much stronger. So you're immediately winning fights, and that is going to carry your average performance like crazy. When you are not losing your fights while you are going towards your desired composition, that's amazing, right? You just have so much extra health, which means there's so fewer games where you're going to randomly die. And that's incredibly valuable if you look at average performance.
I want to try something.
Go for it. We have demons in second. Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm not done trying the something.
Oh.
You keep talking, I'll tell you.
We have demons in second, and that's, you know, we mentioned the Feldrake. We mentioned how certain quests make it a lot easier to get Felimental online and benefit from that. And similar to the beast stuff, once you have a few shop buffs and you get a Feldrake, just triggering that Feldrake once every so often, just finding a cupcakes and eating the whole shop, is going to make you so strong that you're much less likely to die once you have a few of the pieces online. When we compare that to Murlocs, which is in third, which overall has a much higher ceiling than either beasts or demons, when the Murloc train is going, you are stronger than both demons and beasts. The way how you die here is that you can't find your brand, or you don't have the primal fin on the board, or you don't have the Merc Eye, you never find the coral, or your Bream is too late, and you know, there's a lot of stuff that can go wrong. But it's still in third because it's so incredibly powerful. Then dragons in fourth kind of makes sense, but this is where if you're talking about high level play, you're far more likely to play a pirate game, which is funny because pirates is dead last on, and this is the HS replay tracker data, so this is honestly pretty good for me to see sometimes, because I would never put pirates dead last. But it makes sense because pirates do the exact opposite of what I said happens with beasts and demons. With pirates, you find your smuggler and your Tethys. You're weak as shit. You're so weak. You don't win anything. You don't have stats. You just have money. Here's a bunch of money, and use that money to get stronger. And that's the complete opposite to beast, right? Beast is the exact opposite. You have a Goldrin and you have a Titus. Relax. It's fine. You're strong, man. Just roll a little bit. It's, you know, take 20 seconds to, you know, check your second monitor, whatever, then come back to your game, spend your last 3 gold rolling and buy a banana. But with pirates, it's go hard, make sure you have enough money, make sure that you play the right units at the right time.
But and you still die to beasts. Yeah.
I will say that even in some of the games that I play where I have a lot more experience playing pirates, I sometimes still have that where I'm like, damn, I just, you know, one turn too short, couldn't quite get there.
I'm done with what I wanted to do.
Sure, I'll finish pirates and then we can do that.
Yeah. Okay, sounds good.
I will say, if you're going to play pirates, one of the key things to do early, for me at least, seems to be having a smuggler. Smuggler is the tier 5 pirate that gives you +1 starting gold for every pirate you have, because that just pushes you over the edge so much faster. So even if you have a Tethys, having Smuggler on your board helps so much. You get more gold to spend, which means your Tethys is going to proc more often, which means you're more likely to find your pairs and then your triples. You're more likely to find your brand, etc. Because the whole goal with pirates is to spend a boatload of money every turn and then proc Balladist as often as you can. Balladist is a tier 4 pirate that gives you HP, the battle cry, and that's really what turns a pirate board into something that's insane. And because of that, one of the best buffing pirates that you can have on your board is the 3-drop, the courier, because the courier gives you attack to your board and the Balladist will give you insane amounts of HP. So when you are playing pirates, you're going to buy fluidity as well to swap that Balladist back in the shop and proc it multiple times. You're going to buy that tier 3 spell that procs the battle cry. It's important when you do that, that you end on a shop that has no pirates. So either you have to roll for a shop that has no pirates, or you have to buy the pirate out of the shop so that the Balladist cannot randomly hit the one in the shop. And if you do that, very, very often you're going to win the game, especially if Murlocs are out, because pirates can very routinely completely just outstab beasts. You'll usually have a dealer on your board, and then because you have a courier and you've played some balladists, you can somewhat easily get a dealer with over 1,000 health. That's not that hard once you have your brand online and you are swapping the balladist over and over. So for me, pirates would definitely be in the top five.
Right. I have bad news for you.
What's your thing?
Okay. So I've reorganized it by first place win percentage.
Sure.
And I wanted to see if that makes more sense to you. So with this, Murlocs would be first, Beast second, Demons third, Naugus fourth, Probers fifth, Elemental sixth, Dragon seventh, Mechs eighth, Pirates still ninth, and then Undead is last.
Undead told me no games.
Yeah, our Undeads, they don't win. Yeah,
they don't win. But I mean, the data is from 7K, and I don't think that swapping on first places makes that much sense, because if we're talking about strength,
I agree.
We are talking
about
MMR
to do
games.
Sure. First minus last as well, but I didn't have the time.
You know, okay. Yeah. No problem.
Murlocs would still be. Actually, in that world, Beast might be number one if you do first minus last, and then Murlocs would be second. And then it would be
What's first minus last?
Like the first place win percentage minus the last place win percentage, just to like,
right?
It's less accurate than what we're doing, but I just thought it'd be interesting.
That's fair. Yeah. Okay, it's just another way of looking at the data.
Of looking at the data, yeah. So,
okay, cool.
People do that all the time in data analysis. They just
they look at it in a different way.
Yeah, just to find what they want. And then
so massage, this is what massaging the data looks like, right? We're like, oh, Murlocs are not performing well enough. Let's massage the data a little bit. Like, oh, Murlocs are first now. Nice.
Let's rearrange it to get the result we want is basically what I'm doing, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Collins, that's bad science.
I agree. But I'm doing
it anyway. Oh man, the other types we briefly touched on them, but so I would say for me, right, pirates would move to the top five. Quillbore, I think, are very,
I feel like that is like very, very skill expression rated, and I feel like this is very accurate. Like for most players, pirates is killing you.
This is the data. This is the data. So this is indeed for 7,000 and above, and for the most, like, I don't have a good representation of how much of that is 7,000 players and how much of that is 10K and up.
It's mostly 7,000.
Yeah, I mean, for sure.
I mean, you if there is a good representation. So go back to Heroes, right? And then
sure,
you can see the games, right? So top 1%, 83,000 games. Top 20%, 1,300,000.
Oh, God, yeah.
So the top 1% is negligible. It doesn't matter.
83,000 games versus a million three. That's a great way of putting things in perspective.
So like it's not relevant what the top 1% are doing in the data. It doesn't show up at all.
So this is really good to for me to have a bit of a check, because I would say that for, as a high level player making a tier list, it would be physically almost very difficult for me to put pirates last. Just because, right. I'm like, why would you not want to play pirates? Like, God, I cannot in good conscience recommend someone play Undead instead of pirates, right? But
I agree. I think Undead is worse, but you know, like, I think it's easier to play, and that's what matters.
Hey man, if you can put a Moros next to a KT, oh yeah, let's go, baby. Look at that scaling.
Copium, yeah, I hear you. Like, yeah, that's not really scaling.
Same thing with allies. I think allies are also very viable, but so hard for me, harder than pirates, just because there's no time.
I feel like Masters of Reality is pretty good though.
Yeah, Master is fine. It's just that a lot of the time to get elementals online, you're playing with a Golden Wraith, and then you have Bran, and then you're playing with a Tavern Tempest, and you get a Salamental from the Tavern Tempest, and it's
why
so
not just
many
Murlocs? I hear you.
Yeah, like you finish your whole turn and you're like sweating, you're like, oh my god, I've added so many stats, and then you see the corals like pop, pop, 2,000, 2,000. You're like, oh, and it doesn't matter. Okay, cool. Well, yeah.
That's what feels bad. I agree. I do not like it when compositions scale way faster by doing less things. Like,
yeah.
You spend 120 seconds doing your absolute best. This Murloc chump plays two cards down, plays down his stupid Murlocs he got for free, and then at the end of the day, he's like three times as big as you. I'm not okay with that. Like, at least let him work up it. Like,
well, we can do the math on that, right? So I think it's not unreasonable to have two Golden Breams in your hands in the end game. So starting the game with eight random Murlocs you generated and two Golden Breams, that means you are getting +6/+6 per Bream per Murloc. So 12, 12.
48. Oh, 96.
96 for their hand. But you have to now keep in mind that when you have a coral on the board, you get a 96 per coral. And if it's golden, it's double. So to make the math easy, let's do 100 each. So you're getting 100 on your guys. So let's say you have a golden coral and a regular coral. So your breams are +200, +200. Then you get another 200, 200 on your regular coral. That's 400, 400. And then you're getting another 400, 400 on your golden coral. So that's 800 stats gained by starting your turn.
And we haven't even used our
extra gold. We have now 18
not
gold.
Not even used.
We have 18 gold ready to go. Now, that's two golden breams. That's end game, right? Most of the time, it's going to be one golden bream. But still, that's highly depressing where, you know, the Murloc player, assuming the math is right, the math might be off. But
hey.
But it would be me, right? It's my math. I would have done something. I mean, it's already off because I made it into 100, right? But you're going to gain some stats from begurgles in your hands and stuff, so it probably evens out. That's insane, right? When you talk about it like that. And it's just... Yeah, in the end game...
That's not even accounting for Tads or other primal
fins. Tads, primal fins. Or you just generate a coral in your hand. You're like, oh, look, I found an 800-800 sitting in my hand. Like, plop it on the board. If we count
that...
I'm not
okay with that.
The start of your turn could literally be like gain 1,200 because you like found a coral. Like, let me put that on the board. That's so dumb, dude.
Double the card with a spell. Like, don't mind if I do.
Yeah, the conch to copy something. Wow, ridiculous. All right, anyways, we're not gonna... I did say I was gonna have this episode be a little bit complaining about Murlocs just because of how bad it feels to lose to them, but I won't take up the whole episode. I'm sorry, guys.
Just 75% of it.
When we look at the different types, I probably play too much dragons because I really enjoy playing dragons. You talked about
warping. Oh, it's fun, Shady.
Yeah.
Are we here just to win or are we here to have fun?
I'm definitely here to have fun. The reason why I play too much dragons is that I can't help myself from buying the second brand, which a lot of the time is a bad EV play.
And you also can't help yourself from buying that first warp wing. Or that second warp.
I play two warp wings pretty much every... But I would say my dragon games do really well just because I'm so disciplined when it comes to like... I'm fitting two warp wings no matter what. Like, I have
don't show your data, Shady. Like, it's irrelevant. If dragons are good for you,
We can have a look at my data, honestly. Let's have a look. That'd be fun.
It's so biased. I don't want to see it.
Wait, how do I do this? My stats... I have no idea. I haven't taken a look at these in forever.
Yeah.
How would I look for types? Let's see.
You have at the very bottom composition performance. And it's a little bit cheaty sometimes, but I mean, it does the best it can to like try to figure out where they go.
33 dragon games. Average placement of 3.24. Compare that to Murlocs.
Mine is higher.
Yours
that's
is
across like all.
Of course, that's... dude. You don't. This is the meta, right? I think I'm on the meta.
Fair enough.
Let's do... When was the MMR reset? Wait, 7 months ago? That's not right. It resets every 4 months, right?
My lowest composition is taunt comp. Oh, wait, no. Wait, what? I've played 3 games of APM Pirates? That's not true.
I played 75 games on the current patch.
That's not true at
all. All right, there's not enough data on this. Anyways, it's I thought it would be fun, but I'll prepare that for the next episode. That'll be more fun.
Sure.
That's good. I can do that for the next episode. I can have a look at my data and we can reference that to what the global player base is doing. But the
dragons are my best all time actually. In terms of MMR, net MMR. All time not like average placement.
Well, net MMR is so weird because you gain 300 after a reset, right? So
oh, you're right. You play that's true.
You play a few dragon games in a climb.
Dragons are my favorite to play while climbing.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what that means. Yeah. That is what that means. You're right.
I've done that before where net MMR is like a useless statistic. Well, maybe not useless, but like it could be very skewed if you, on day one, if you like somehow felt like playing beasts or something, you're like, oh, I'm up 1500 MMR playing beasts. That's pretty good.
No, that makes sense. Like, I like Kelly. I do like Kelly. So
yeah,
I'll play some Kelly all day.
Well, Kelly feels good because with Kelly, yeah, you need Bran, and Bran playing with Bran feels good. So yeah, so
wee.
Although I guess back before the rework, you wouldn't have technically needed a Bran. It'd be nice to get more battle cards.
I'll find a way to add a Bran in there. Shit, you don't worry. There are ways to get battle cries, but I hear what you're saying.
All right, cool. I think that's about it for me. Just meta talking about the just how strong the Murlocs and the Beasts are, but understanding that even though Murlocs feel stronger in general and more of a problem, Beasts would make more sense if they're on average better for people, just because it's easier to execute and stronger overall. But that doesn't mean that there shouldn't be a nerf, because I feel like, I mean, that doesn't mean they can't nerf Beast either. I'd be okay with a nerf for both. But it just feels, as bad as it feels to lose the Beast, I always feel like I could at least scam them with a Sindore, Untaunter Goldrin, and then snipe their banana, right? Something like
that. Does that do anything? Did the Zap change help, or is it like...
Well, the issue with Zap is that Chicken exists, so Zap doesn't attack pre-Chicken. And the
what if that happened? Would that be like too good?
Yeah, that would be... Then you'd kill their Tidus before their Chicken goes off. So that's what the Anchor does, right? So with Anchor, you just have to like guess where the banana or where the Tidus is and kill that. So that is honestly pretty reliable tech. But that's what I mean. You feel like there's a little bit of agency, as much bullshit as Beasts are, right? It feels like I have a fighting chance. And with Murlocs, it's just like, okay, you know, if the person knows what they're doing, again, right? If they are just like horribly out, just their options are so many and they have to play so much APM and they end the turn on, you know, like two shitty Murlocs and the coral isn't protected behind taunts and stuff and my poison finds the coral, then yeah, okay, I could win. But if you have a little bit of protection, yeah.
What if you change the spell that changes a card in your on the board to 1/1? What if it said change a card on your board in your opponent's hand? Like the highest.
Wait, I don't understand what you're suggesting.
Isn't there a spell that turns one of the cards your opponent's board to a 1/1?
Oh, one health. There's upper hand. Yeah, start of combat, change. But the funny thing is upper hand procs before coral goes off. So even if you hit their coral, then the coral gains the stats from the hand. So you'll just remove like 100 health that it had from a Gurgles and then it'll gain the thousands from the Bream. So even if you upper hand their coral, it doesn't work.
No. What if it targeted the hand as well, is what I'm saying.
That's so niche.
It's so niche.
That's so niche. I don't think that's the way to do it.
I hear you. I'm trying to deal with Murlocs, but it doesn't... Like, how do you deal with hand buffs? Like, there's not an easy counterplay card.
I mean, I'm assuming what they would do is they would tune down how much Bream is scaling. And they would just make it, you know, like right now it's getting...
Does that solve the problem? I don't feel like
we talked about that at one point where I think Bream was like something like +2/+3 or +2/+2 or something. And then it changed it and then they buffed it to like +3/+3. And I was saying, this is insane. I was already playing Bream before. I can't believe they did this. And now that Murlocs are just stomping so hard, I would assume that that was the first lever they turn or they pull on where they say, hey, what if we just take 1/1 away from the Breams per Murloc played, and then by default, their boards are going to look more manageable. Yeah, it's still going to be strong, and they're going to have a lot of economy and options, but at least the Coral is going to be significantly smaller. So, you know, if I were a betting man, that's what I would guess that they're thinking. Like, okay, let's see what happens.
And he does not bet.
Well, I play BGs every day, my man. Every second brand buy is a big bet.
And we're still surprised by their patch changes. I'm not here.
But that would be my first guess, where they say, okay, let's not go crazy. Let's take 1/1 off the Bream and see how big the corals are. Does it still have a crazy high win rate? We'll see what happens.
That's fair.
Yeah. All right, cool. All right, guys, we'll wrap it up here. But as always, if you're listening, feel free. I don't know, you check our email, right?
Of course,
he does every day before podcast, for sure.
Every day before a podcast is actually a good idea. Like every before,
right? Make sure we see any suggestions. So if there's anything you would like us to talk about, but feel free to just drop by in the Discord as well. You can go to my Twitch. Just twitch.tv/shadybunny !Discord. I'll have an invite link. Go there and suggest any kind of topics you want us to talk about. Usually we're just going to talk about the patch changes and, you know, meta talk, but we're open to ideas. So if you have any requests, we can have a look at it.
Yep.
All right. Send us off, Collins.
Thank you guys for joining us today. If you have any suggestions, send that to hsbdpodcast@gmail.com. If not, you can find us at YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, at all that good stuff. And I'm checking the email right now.
Yeah, right.
We're fine.
We're okay. Good. We're clean. All right.
But that's all we got for you. Hope you guys see us in the next couple of weeks and take care of yourselves. Every day, I tell Shady, every day we're one step closer to duos. You know, that's going to be
right around the corner, Copium. Yeah.
Right, yes.
No, but that's going to be amazing. So absolutely. That's going to be one hell of a podcast episode. Once our first podcast after duos is going to be... Hopefully it's going to be straight fire. That's
it's going
to
be very
good. It's just going to be us talking like, it's so good, guys. It's so good. You have to play it. All right, guys. Have a good one. See ya.
Take care.